Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Min-Sing Pei, who is the director of the Keck Center for International Strategic Studies and a professor of government at Claremont McKenna College. His research focuses on democratization in developing countries, economic reform, and governance in China and U.S.-China relations. He's the author of From Reform to Revolution, The Demise of Communism in China and the Soviet Union, and China's Trap Transition, The Limits of Developmental Autocracy. He has an article at the BBC, China's Iran Dilemma. Welcome to Background Briefing, Min-Sing Pei.
Thank you for having me.
And your article suggests that it's not an open and shut case, as we've always assumed that China will back Iran no matter what, given that Iran is China's third largest supplier of crude oil, about 500,000 barrels a day. You're suggesting that China is actually in a bit of a dilemma here. Elaborate, if you will.
Oh, absolutely. I think China is in a pinch. On the one hand, it has enormous economic interests in Iran. As you said, China imports about 500,000 barrels of oil from Iran every day. China has also signed deals worth tens of billions of dollars in energy deals in Iran. So Iran is a very important economic prize for China. But at the same time, China has other important trading partners, such as the U.S. China exports $350 billion a year to the U.S., and that exports dwarf China's interests with Iran. And even in the energy field, China has another more important trading partner. That's China's top source of imported oil. That's Saudi Arabia. The Saudis do not want the Iranians to get nuclear weapons. And the Saudis are telling the Chinese, do not help Iran.
So given that today the Europeans announced that they're joining in the boycott, which apparently, according to the International Energy Agency, will start biting in mid-2012, what they mean by it start biting, it means that the price of oil is going to go up for everybody. And it's already happening now, over $110 a barrel now. So surely China must be looking at that as well.
Well, of course, China is worried about the rising prices of oil. But China is even more worried about the closing of the Strait of Hormuz if there is military conflict. So if you have to pick less of the two evils, China would pick rising oil prices rather than a war in the Middle East. Here, of course, we're thinking in terms of using the sanctions to buy some time. And perhaps the Iranians will come to the table.
Well, in your article at the BBC, China's Iran Dilemma, Min-Sing Pei, you suggest that China may actually change its mind if there was a boycott. First of all, you suggest that had this boycott been arranged through the United Nations, the Chinese probably would have gone along with it. But since it's largely a US-European-led effort, they're not. But if Japan and South Korea join in the embargo, you're suggesting that China will sort of start reducing its imports from Iran under various pretexts.
Oh, absolutely. China will never say that it's cutting oil imports from Iran because of Western pressure. That would be losing face, and then would be admitting that China is acting under duress. China will use any excuse. Oh, the Iranians are not living up to their promises. So we've found better deals elsewhere. The Chinese will find the excuses. But the bottom line is China will be cutting its oil imports from Iran gradually.
So What kind of diplomacy do you think is China engaged in with Iran, given Iran's isolation? I mean, I'm trying to get a sense of their influence over the Iranian leadership. Some analysts I've had talking about this situation, clearly there's a kind of covert war going on, certainly from the point of view of the Israelis, with they're the likely suspects in the killing of these Iranian nuclear scientists. Naval exercises, joint U.S. naval and Israeli naval exercises were cancelled, but the Iranians are going to be doing another naval exercise in the Gulf. They've already talked about shutting down the Gulf. What kind of influence do you think China's having on Iran behind the scenes? Because all of this pressure is being brought on Iran because of its alleged nuclear program. And all they have to do is open that up and it all goes away, presumably.
Well, China understands that the Iranians, if the Iranians are determined to get hold of nuclear weapons, nobody can stop them. This is very realistic. But at the same time, they want to avoid a military conflict. So this is perhaps what they're telling the Iranians. First of all, do not even think about closing the Strait of Hormuz. We will be victimized. We will be a victim, and you will lose a very important friend. Second, the Chinese will say you should go, you should comply with International Atomic Agency's request for inspections. If you cooperate, we can help you at the United Nations. That's why China insists that all sanctions have to go through the United Nations. That's where China can, along with Russia, be helpful to Iran. And so they try to dispel any notion the Iranians may have that China will use its influence to protect Iran.
So China, though, recognizes the double standard here, that the West and the U.S. are pushing Iran to the wall to reveal its nuclear program that most analysts say is well off from developing a nuclear weapon. But, you know, there's always the possibility of a surprise. Nevertheless, Israel has an extremely mature nuclear arsenal that nobody talks about. So if this were to go to the U.N. Security Council, would China insist that Israel reveal its nuclear arsenal as well?
Oh, no, China will not, because China, first of all, China does not have a dog in this fight. being subject to a double standard itself, China knows that this is something it should not really get hung upon. So it's, if it goes to the UN, China will try to buy the Iranians more time. China's philosophy, if somehow you kick the can down the line, the problem will get solved.
So what is China's attitude then to nuclear proliferation? Because after all, and this was some time back, but the Chinese provided the Pakistanis with designs for a working nuclear weapon, which is the basis of the Pakistani arsenal, which incidentally is the fastest growing nuclear arsenal on the planet. It has apparently already outstripped France and maybe even outstripped England in the number of nuclear weapons that the Pakistanis are manufacturing. And I think it's a reasonable assumption, given the insecurity in the world today, that it's the most likely nuclear weapon to go off in anger since Nagasaki in 1945 might well be a Pakistani nuclear weapon.
Well, I think in the case of China's help for Pakistan, that was largely because of India. China's strategy was to prevent India from completely dominating the Indian subcontinent, the South Asian subcontinent. So that was a very deliberate act. Until very recently, China basically had a hands-off attitude. Now its policy on non-proliferation is changing. It is not going to be a proliferator, but it is not going to do a whole lot to counter proliferation. There's a huge difference. China views the task of preventing the spread of nuclear weapons mainly as a burden of leading Western countries. If China can help, China will do something. But China will not be on the forefront in helping Western countries in preventing the spread of nuclear weapons.
And again, I'm speaking with Min-Sing Pei, who's the director of the Keck Center for International and Strategic Studies and a professor of government at the Claremont McKenna College. His research focuses on the democratization in developing countries, economic reform and governance in China and U.S.-China relations. He has an article at the BBC, China's Iran Dilemma, and we're speaking about China's influence over Iran, given that the Europeans have joined in with the U.S. in tightening their embargo on Iran, particularly in the banking sector. Today, the U.S. Treasury announced sanctions against Iran's third largest bank, and meanwhile, the Israelis are apparently are conducting covert warfare, which the U.S. has recently tried to distance itself from. There is a diplomatic track going on between the U.S. and Iran behind the scenes, I understand. But would China have any influence over Israel at all? You mentioned in your article
very little.
That there's a concern that Israel is going to launch a preemptive strike against Iran's nuclear facility.
Yeah, well, China may convey its concerns to the Israelis, but the Chinese know that what they say makes very little difference. If the Americans cannot stop the Israelis, nobody can.
And that is, of course, a major question. What did you make of Hillary Clinton going public after the most recent killing of the Iranian nuclear scientist? Actually, he wasn't a scientist. He was an organizer of the program, apparently. They went public and said, we have nothing to do with it. My understanding is that Hillary Clinton and Obama were quite annoyed with the Israelis. They felt the timing of that killing coincided with the meetings that they were taking place in Turkey between the U.S. and senior Iranian leadership. And then the U.S. canceled the joint exercise with Israel. So how would you interpret that?
Well, I would say that obviously that statement by Secretary Clinton shows to some extent American unhappiness with a much more aggressive approach adopted by the Israelis. At the same time, I would also say that just in terms of defending America's moral standing in the world, the U.S. has to come out publicly to denounce assassinations and similar terrorist acts. So I'm not surprised at all with that kind of diplomatic act.
And Min-Sing Pei, what do you think, though, is the likelihood? You say that in your article at the BBC, China's Iran Dilemma, that China is doing a balancing act because it has good relations with Saudi Arabia, which it's recently improved with the visit by Premier Wen Jiabao. Everybody seems to think that the Saudis are going to make up for the shortfall. Geithner was recently in Japan, where the finance minister in Japan said that we would join an embargo, and then the prime minister contradicted him. I understand that the Americans are trying to get the South Koreans to go along with it as well. They tried with India. India refused. But behind the scenes, the assumption is that the Saudis are the ones that are promising to make up for the shortfall. Do you think the Saudis can make up for the shortfall?
Well, I'm not an energy expert. I think the Saudis certainly have some spare capacity that they can call upon. But whatever the Saudis can produce, the uncertainty in the oil market has increased a great deal. The Saudis may, at the end of the day, deliver 2.5 million barrels of extra oil. I think the common understanding is that the Saudis can only do 1.5 million. Maybe the others can chip in the rest 1 million barrels, because the Iranian supply for the oil market is about 2.5 million. But, you know, nobody knows. But even, as I said, whatever the Saudis do, there will be a period of price gyrations in the market, and nobody who consumes oil wants to see that, the Chinese included.
Well, but it doesn't exactly hurt the Saudis. It's just a high price of oil.
No, it doesn't hurt the Saudis. The Saudis will love it. The Russians will love it. The Venezuelans will love it.
Right.
Anybody except the oil-consuming nations.
Sure. But my understanding is that with this European embargo that began today, that the Greeks, the Italians, and the Spaniards all complained that this was going to hurt them, and they have obviously have financial and economic troubles of their own. So the assumption would be that somehow the Saudis or others have made a promise to make up for the shortfall. Is that your understanding?
Oh, yeah. The Saudis have promised behind the scenes to make up the shortfall.
But they couldn't handle China on top of Greece, Italy, and Spain.
Well, China wants a preferred place in the line. So that's because China's we're the biggest importer. We're the most important geopolitically. If you really want us to put pressure on the Iranians, give us oil first.
I see. So that would be the game that you think would be played.
Yes, yes. And probably the Chinese will ask for some discount. Being good businessmen themselves.
Well, but isn't that the attraction of Iranian oil, that the Iranians are offering discounts? And they offer...
The Iranians are not offering discount. Recently, China has reduced its imports because the Chinese are demanding a discount. They said, importing from you, we pay a price. That's why you have to give us discounts.
Oh, I see. So the shoe's on the other foot then. The Chinese are saying, you're the bad guys on the block, so you should give us a break. Well, just in closing, Wen Xingpei, my understanding is, though, that the economic arrangements between Tehran and China, or Iran and China, since China's Iran's largest trading partner, are quite deep. Not just in the oil, but I understand that to some extent there's been a bartering arrangement with China for the oil, bringing in consumer goods, which China manufactures now that the U.S. no longer has its manufacturing base. And everybody that I talked to that spent time in Iran recently say that everything in Iran is made in China. So give us a sense of where that stands and how that might be affected.
I don't think that will be affected at all. I think the Chinese policy is to minimize what it has to do under Western pressure. So if it's oil imports, China will cut some, but not completely. If it's financial dealings, China will comply to the extent it is. It does not feel the real pain. Other economic trading activities, China will not comply.
And what about the bartering? Is that fairly extensive?
Bartering will continue. Bartering, if it's not oil, then what the Iranians have to barter. I think they will have an argument over the goods with which they're going to barter with.
But at this point, it's true, isn't it, that Iran is a huge...
absolutely. And, of course, if the isolation of Iran only gives China more bargaining power because it can demand better prices.
And just in terms, in a broader picture, just in closing, Wen Xingpei, isn't there's a lot going on in terms of China's strategic plans in terms of securing not just the oil, but the sea lanes of communication, the pipelines, and to that extent, they're building a pipeline in Myanmar, Burma, directly to China to cut down the flow, and means that the Chinese tankers won't have to go through the choke points at the Straits of Malacca. And all the way through the Pacific. They're also, aren't they building pipelines across the stands as well?
Well, they already have a gas pipeline that imports gas from Kazakhstan. Not oil yet, but a Russian oil pipeline has been completed. And is now supplying China.
And is that through the stands or is that through Siberia?
No, that's direct from the Russian Far East.
Oh, from Siberia?
Yeah, from Siberia.
I see. And that's bringing oil in?
That's bringing oil. Mm-hmm. The problem is that the Russians need to invest a lot in Siberia in order to ramp up production.
Mm-hmm. And
so China can get more oil imports from Russia in the future, but not immediately.
And when do you think the pipeline in Burma will be completed?
Well, I'm not following it. I think it's still way in the future because the terrain is extremely complex. We're talking about very high mountains.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, in summary, China is actively investing in
I think if you sit in Beijing, probably you would do the same.
Right. Well, I thank you for joining us here today.
Okay, you're welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Min-Sing Pei, who is the director of the Keck Center for International Strategic Studies and a professor of government at Claremont McKenna College. His research focuses on democratization in developing countries, economic reform and governance in China, and U.S.-China relations. He's the author of From Reform to Revolution, The Demise of Communism in China and the Soviet Union, and China's Trapped Transition, The Limits of Developmental Autocracy. He has an article at the BBC, China's Iran Dilemma. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about pressure on Syria.